And welcome back. Hope your day was rewarding. Hope tomorrow was better. You've got another chance, at least most of us do. Tonight, our Morgellons special feature program number 8, with some very special guests coming back to us again tonight to spend some time and to share their personal experiences of struggling with this insidious disease, disorder, syndrome, affliction, whatever you want to call it, Morgellons disease, which is still virtually unknown around most of the world. It is clearly contagious, often calamitous, and over time, seemingly invariably catastrophic for those afflicted to one degree or another. Morgellons fibers and those commonly reported and photographed gristle-like growths, little fatty things, and other frightful things that are all now available in color photographs, and you can see many of them at Rents.com on the left-hand side of the homepage anytime you'd like, including some videotape of these fibers, these tubes, these nanotubes, actually moving. Tonight, we're going to take a special up-close and in-depth look at this stealth invasion of nanomachines of the human body, which take up residence in the body, and some would say take over the human body. And we will talk to, as I say, victims and people who have experienced this, unfortunately, firsthand, and deal with one of the most sadder aspects, maybe the saddest aspect of all, of this wicked infestation, that being the psychological, emotional, and other damages of a spiritual nature, as it were, done to those infested. In most cases, the changes in the personality and the thought processes, and there's the rub, go unnoticed by those afflicted, but certainly not by those loved ones around them. Marriages have been ruined, wonderful relationships of all kinds have been destroyed, and the Morgellons victims are the last to know that their own struggles with these little machines in their brains are the reason for these losses of often wonderful things in life. Morgellons results in many psychological and emotional issues. Physically, of course, shortly after infection, it is commonly reported there is a sudden and inexplicable loss of energy. Stamina goes. But beyond that, there is the brain fog we've heard about so often in our first 7 programs, an inability to speak easily, often using wrong or inappropriate words and sentences trying to communicate, and the frustration that comes from that kind of a handicap. There is anger. There is confusion. And there is also an amplification of the negative or more downside elements of some people's personalities and the emotional responses as well of those affected. And tragically, there is virtually nothing that can be done about it. Joining us again tonight is Cliff Mickelson. Cliff has been struggling with Morgellons for a number of years and knows as much about it as our other special guest this evening, Jan Smith, who is back with us as well. Cliff, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure to hear your voice.
Thank you, sir. And dear Jan Smith, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jeff. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being with us again tonight. Cliff, my opening remarks, you've been dealing with this, I haven't. Did they come close to describing the situation?
Jeff, you have an awesome grasp of what this disease is about. It's a physical effects, it's psychological effects. There are a number of other effects as well, some of them subtle, some of them not so subtle. Overall, I think the most telling point you made was the one that the Morgellons victims themselves are many times the last to realize what's happening to themselves.
And that is one of the most tragic aspects of this whole thing. There is, of course, the denial in the beginning, and when I assume people point out to those afflicted that, gee, you know, this is going on, that kind of change is being noticed and so forth, what do the victims say? They often say, forget
well,
it, not true.
Yeah, exactly. The first thing that happens in many cases is that they go into a denial, or they'll project it onto another problem. For instance, oh, I'm just not getting enough sleep. I must be getting older. My eyes, my vision's going bad. It's because I'm 50 years old and I need glasses. You know, it's and or my teeth are going bad because I haven't been to the dentist for the last 2 years, but that's not the case.
You mentioned something interesting, Cliff. You said not enough sleep. This is a common situation that people try to blame it on, huh?
Very interesting. And it also tends, many people that suffer from this become insomniac and begin to, although they're tired all the time, they don't rest well.
Uh-huh.
They tend to stay up late hours at night, just never getting enough rest or never feeling like they got enough rest. It's almost, you know, in a way, if you were to compare the body to a computer, it's almost as if you gave it a command to start computing the square root of pi.
Mm-hmm.
And more memory bank just starts being slowly taken up with this affliction.
Like the RAM gets packed and you run out of RAM and there's nothing there to work with.
Absolutely, and it's a slow process. And at first you begin to say, you know, there's something wrong. I'm not sure, why am I feeling like this? What's wrong with me? You know, I don't smoke cigarettes. I get winded when I try and climb a hill. What's the story here? But you never quite put it together. Unless you're fortunate enough to go on the internet and or hear from other people or hear shows like the Rents program talking about this, you can go for years and not understand what's happening to your body other than to realize that slowly over time you become more and more conscious that your RAM is being used up, as it were.
How many years have you had Morgellons, Cliff?
9 now.
Is it also, and thank God for you and Jan and others and the information online now, it is also, and I've talked to other people on the internet, email about this, even with the information, there's still denial.
Yes, there is still denial. Well, denial from top to bottom, it depends upon what part of a segment of society you want to ferret denial out in. But especially with those afflicted, their denial is really tragic to see. And people don't understand. They're terrified by the implications of what's happening to them. And they grasp straws saying, well, maybe this really isn't as bad as I think it is. Maybe it's just, I'm going to get better. You know, it's going to be better tomorrow. This is really just a nightmare. They get into a form of denial like that. And, of course, they're disabused.
How about Jan Smith?
Yes.
Please step in here and weigh in with your thoughts on this initial look at the psychological and emotional personality aspects of what this terrible disease, whatever we want to call it, does to people.
Well, I think it's the whole process for me was stages. And when I first had this and it was lesions, that was a skin condition, and
right.
You know, skin conditions come and they go, and it's not a threatening thing.
If you can talk a little louder, Jan, just talk right
I'm
in.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Sure.
There you go. Thanks.
Okay, the skin conditions, you know, come and go, but when you get to a point where you've gotten rid of a good number of the lesions and you don't feel any better, you start really saying to yourself, you know, what do I have to do to feel better? If it's not those lesions, you know, what's really going on in my body? And now that the research has been done I think the more I know, the less I know, and the more of the actual facts that have come forward, the more frightening this has become, and the more I've really wanted to kind of withdraw from this myself. It's very hard to deal with.
The issue of these nano devices, whatever they are,
right.
Is one of multi-levels, and I mean that literally and figuratively. On the literal sense, the lesions do come and they go and they diminish, but the fibers don't go away, do they, Cliff?
They do not go away. They're always there in one form or another. The production of the fibers will wane at times, and generally, actually, Jeff, interestingly enough, they tend to decline over a period of time, being more obvious and in greater number at the beginning of the affliction.
In terms of being observable at the skin level, right?
Exactly, observable at the skin level. But the question is, but they're still there, and you can find them in the mucous membranes, you can find them in the hair follicles, you can find them in all kinds under your fingernails. They're still there. They're just not as obvious as in the initial stages where they first are really staking out their territory, if you will.
Jan, how many years have you had this again?
Well, I just had a wonderful anniversary. Now it's 10. I got this in 1997.
Wow.
So, I mean, for me, this is kind of one of the saddest anniversaries that I've had.
We've seen in the sporting world, for example, the Oakland A's pitcher Billy Koch, K-O-C-H, was a top reliever in baseball until he came down with Morgellons. He and his wife and then three children all developed Morgellons. And I understand now that that family has been broken apart by this disease, which is another dimension to it, which we're going to talk about. This is not a happy program, but this is an issue of medical science or some other kind of science that we're going to explore and keep hammering our way at until we finally figure it out and finally figure out what the hell to do about it. We'll be right back with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith in just a couple minutes. Okay, welcome back. We're talking with Jan Smith and Cliff Mickelson. Jan, as you just heard, a victim of Morgellons for 10 years now, has been kind enough to be with us on all of our 8 Morgellons specials, all 8 of them. All 7 of the first installment, this is number 8, are available free online for you to listen to at any time. Cliff Mickelson, Morgellons victim, as you heard, 8 years, writer, researcher, extraordinary man. Cliff has brought major national attention to the Morgellons problem. He networks with hundreds of Morgellons victims and has been with us here on the Morgellons special from the beginning of the series. Jan, the issue of brain fog, of an inability to speak easily, of using inappropriate words, not being able to grab the right word that, you know, in days past would be easier. Is this something that sounds familiar to you personally? Does it afflict most?
Oh, definitely. I've listened to myself on the radio, and I hear all these little pregnant pauses while I'm waiting to figure out what the word is I'm looking for. And before this all happened, I was almost what you'd call hyperkinetic. Sometimes I talk so fast people couldn't even keep up with me, maybe a little too fast. And I didn't have any problem finding the words I wanted to use. And I, just listening to myself on the radio, I do see that. And, you know, talking about brain fog, I mean, the big faux pas that I've done recently was my son actually called me from New York. He lives in a different state on Easter and said, "Happy Easter, Mom." And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is this Easter? And in the meanwhile, I'm thinking, I didn't do anything for my grandchildren. I didn't even know what day it was. And, I mean, that was real embarrassing.
Yeah, well, was it like that the first 2 or 3 years, or has it just progressed over the years?
It's actually progressed quite a bit in the last, I'd say, 3 years out of the 10.
Mm-hmm. Some people suggest that the brain issues, the emotional issues, actually will manifest themselves very early on, and the fibers show up a little later. I mean, I guess it's not the same with everyone, because we're looking, again, at fibers on the skin level, when in point of fact, the fibers are working throughout the body, probably all the major organ systems, and certainly in the brain itself. Cliff, is that accurate?
Yes. As a matter of fact, you're touching on something that's really close to my heart here. I'm very interested in that particular aspect of this affliction, Jeff. And in particular, one thing that intrigues me is the recent discovery of fibers in the bones of Star Child. And I haven't had a chance to really check that deeply. I'd like to personally go down and see this, but I'm not sure if the listeners are familiar with who the Star Child was.
Well, that's Lloyd Pye's project, and Lloyd's been a friend of mine for many, many years, and if you need any connection with him, just let me know.
Absolutely, because it turns out that, as I understand it anyway, that there was a discovery of some fibers that are extremely similar looking to what the Morgellons fibers are in the actual bone marrow of of this Star Child.
Of the skull, yeah.
Yes, in the skull, I believe it was.
Right.
And
right.
So this you know, intrigues me. What's going on here with this stuff? What is its agenda?
How does it impact, Cliff, the personality of people in marriages? I understand that many marriages have been lost because of this, and relationships as well.
Well, the genius, if you will, of this affliction is the way that it works on the personality, and the way it does maneuver the people that it works on in ways that of which they're not aware. And it's very, very hard on relationships, because you tend to have your negative traits magnified over time. Not only do you lose interest in things that have always been of interest to you, and that would include your relationship, you begin to just come apart personality-wise. And after a while, you're living with somebody that you don't recognize anymore.
People that are workaholics become more so and become more fatigued, that kind of thing. People who are OCD get more OCD, negative sorts of things.
Negative sorts of things. In the past, I've used examples like if you always sort of had a little thing about balancing your checkbook, it was difficult for you. When you get Morglins, you will not be able to balance your checkbook. It just is not going to happen. You know, as time goes on, these kind of things, if you have trouble filing your tax returns because you creatively avoided them, mm-hmm. when you get Morglins, it's going to take a horsewhip to get you to do it. And then there's other things too. If you like to go out and camp and hunt and fish with your spouse mm-hmm. and do these kind of things, after a few years of suffering from this affliction, you have no desire to do any of that kind of stuff. And the spark that drove the relationship tends to extinguish.
So the feelings of love and affection and attraction are certainly targets of these little machines, whatever they are.
They get morphined. They get morphined.
Morphine. Jan?
Yes. Yeah. I agree with most of everything that Cliff's saying. Of course, it's a little different in every case, and I think that one of the things that starts to drive some of this thing in the wrong direction is we're the only disease that I know of where people have to defend themselves on a daily basis to prove that they're sick. I think it puts you in a defensive posture right from the beginning. I mean, the sad fact of it is when you first get this disease, if you go to the doctor and he tells you that your diagnosis is something mental and mm-hmm. your spouse finds
That's
this out,
terrible.
They're more apt to believe the doctor than you.
Terrible nightmare. And then, of course, the other side of that coin, Cliff, would be trying to defend the denial side of the ledger.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, we have people that have been put in mental hospitals over that.
In other words, there's nothing wrong with me. It's you.
Right, right. And then the family ends up committing them.
Okay, we'll be back in a minute as we try to make sense of this terribly damaging, destructive nightmare called Morgellons disease from an emotional, psychological, and personal standpoint. Right back in just a few minutes. Okay, and we're back. Talking with Jan Smith and Cliff Mickelson about the emotional, mental, psychological impact, the damages, apparently irreversible, of Morgellons, at least to a large degree. Cliff Mickelson, the issue of someone afflicted with this, not knowing what's happening to them, in denial about it, and if family or support organizations bring up the issue that you do have Morgellons and there is a psychological factor involved here, whether you want to deal with it, whether you're aware of it, whether you could admit it or not, it seems to me to be almost horrific. Talk about an interpersonal catastrophe.
Yes, because it's so hard to figure out the way to reach through to these people to get them to actually confront the issue and to say, yes, you know, I do understand that I have this. And unfortunately, the denial that many patients go through is reinforced by the people around them and by the medical establishment who say, if you have this, if you think you have this, then, mm-hmm. then you are crazy. And so that reinforces their denial. And Jeff, the way to get through to these people, it just depends upon the type of personality you're dealing with, but it's tragic.
The idea of someone having, like Jan, fibers crawling out of her body 24/7, and some people who don't have very many fibers at all, but a few fibers and a few Morgellons issues is in fact Morgellons. It's like you don't have AIDS partially, you have it.
Yes. Yes, and here's something I'd like to remind all of the listeners tonight, that just because you may not have lesions doesn't necessarily mean you don't have Morgellons. This disease afflicts people on all different levels. You don't necessarily have to have the full-blown case to be suffering from the psychological effects.
Because it's internal. You don't see it.
That's right. That's right. In fact, to tell you the truth, for the first 2 years that I had this, I didn't know what I had, but I knew there was something wrong because I knew that psychologically things were changing with me. It's just the way I was. I was in tune with that. Some people aren't. But there was no, I didn't have fibers. I didn't have macrofibers or the colored fibers coming out or anything. And I just knew something was wrong. So this thing, you can go through, and I believe that there are many people out there in the world, Jeff, who are afflicted with this right now, who do not show the overt signs, but nonetheless are exhibiting the psychological symptoms.
Jan Smith, how would you respond to this?
I agree, and right now I think the Internet is the biggest source of any place that people can even figure out that they have this disease. I recently had a hospitalization, and I had therapists coming to the house. I was in a nursing home shortly after the operation and whatnot, and I spoke to everybody I could speak to about this, and I just said to everyone, wear gloves. And all of these medical people said the same thing to me. Morgellons, what is that? I've never heard of it. So, I mean, it's not even a matter of the people that having this admitting that they have it. In some cases, it's not knowing it and no one being aware that they have it. And that, you know, if they don't know something exists, they can't know they have it.
Right. And trying to, there was a profile of one married couple. I can't remember where I read it now. But the, I can't remember which one had it, the husband or the wife. Let's just assume the husband had it. The wife was trying to be extremely supportive, and she said, I was totally loving, understanding, but it didn't work because the hostility, the irrationality, would come back to me no matter what I did. It was an almost impossible situation.
I mean, this is something I alluded to Cliff the other day, but we have four cats in the house, and, you know, I adore the cats. But I got to a point where if I got up and I just didn't feel good, I didn't want anything to do with those cats. And it was just, you know, spend my time saying, get away from me. I can't deal with you. It just seems like I can't focus on that many things at a time. And if I'm trying to do something else, I can't deal with having a cat on me at the same time, which is crazy because that used to be kind of a given. And I'd, you know, look down and say, oh, gee, I've got two cats in my lap. I don't even notice when they crawled up. But, yeah, there's just definitely something in your nature that becomes very much more irritable about little things.
Yes, Jeff, if I could interject real quick.
Please, yeah.
Jan is so exactly right on the money with that. And this is the thing about this disease is that every month that goes by, that we're discovering new things that it affects with the personality. For instance, in my own case, I have become highly intolerant of noise. Whereas I used to be years ago, I used to play rock and roll. I mean, but now just noises bother me. Everything slowly begins to just all kinds of things begin to unravel in your life when you have this disease. Your vision, your teeth, your hearing, your sensitivity to noise, your sensitivity to heat. That's another one that is very rarely mentioned, your sensitivities to heat and cold. Which you get very, very susceptible.
So you get too hot and you get too cold. It's kind of like extremes.
You can feel heat. You can. It's in my case anyway. I don't know about other people, but I can actually sense heat. Whereas before I never sensed it. It's hard to describe. If we could go back to the relationship issue for just a moment.
Yeah, one person trying to deal with one who is infected. How does one do that?
Well, that's like I said, is a tough issue because you've got the denial. But I wanted to point out that denial also exists on the other side of the relationship with the partner that may not be infected, and that's a real problem for sufferers. When you have a sufferer who is in denial, eventually they're going to have to deal with it sooner or later, and with enough support and enough help, you'll be able to reach through to them. But when you have a spouse that is in denial about their spouse having this affliction, you've got a serious problem.
Terminally serious in terms of the relationship. Yeah,
absolutely.
And on the other hand, when the spouse, say the wife, is very supportive of a husband who has it, just trying to give love, trying to be there, trying to help and understand, but getting no, one plus one doesn't equal two anymore.
getting kicked in the teeth for it. And that actually has to do with, I believe, or suspect anyway, that a lot of that comes out of the depression created by the disease, so that the person who is afflicted says, you know what, I don't care that you're supportive and kind and all this sort of stuff. They just, they sink deeper and deeper into a form of depression that negates all the kindness in the world.
And they can still walk and talk and carry on, but they are, it's not a clinical depression like we commonly think of it. It sounds to me like you're describing a different kind of depression.
Yes, and that's it's a strange one, but it's just a total loss of, it's a disintegration of the personality to some extent.
And it's because these little goddamn machines have gotten into the brain and literally are bioelectrically
poisoning
and in many other ways as well, the whole process.
Yes.
Okay, stand by. We'll come right back and have another special guest who will join us, Karen, in just a few minutes. Okay, we are back. My next guest is a type A. Her biography, her brief bio is fascinating. She was a type A multitasker, an eminent domain project manager. She ran a small organic farm and an online antiques business. She said, we had a large home with a pool, 10 acres with horses, 401ks, and insurance on everything. And from there, things changed. Her name is Karen, and I want to welcome her to the program. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Jeff.
Thanks very much. Oh, thank you for being here. You were a little different. Your Morgellons began with apparently no outright lesions and fibers. Tell us what happened with you.
No, sir. The first symptom was a flu-like affliction and a bowel stoppage, high fever. That passed. It went on for about 2 weeks, and it passed. And I then began to have petit mal seizures, but to the extreme. I would pass out. I'd find myself parked, you know, in a parking lot, not knowing how I got there, where I was, who I was, when it was. Then I began to have tics and spasms that became so severe I might, for instance, kick the person sitting next to me. I did a lot of public speaking, and that became severely affected. And I'd be doing public presentations, and what I was hearing in my head was not what was coming out of my mouth. And thank goodness I was rescued a lot by my boss.
Were not able to manifest the spoken words you were thinking you were saying.
Right.
They weren't coming out right.
And I did not recognize that fact.
That's pretty scary.
Yes. And further, I developed what's called echolalia, which is echoing down to the very inflection and accent of a person. And in business, people considered that very rude.
That is a little rude, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't go over real well.
The physical kicking and twitching and so forth, that happened to the baseball player, Billy Koch. His manifested with twitches and muscle spasms, and that ended his career. That doesn't always happen with people who have Morgellons.
I didn't realize that. I know there's lots of tremors, but these were extreme to where when I went to the doctors, I'd make sure that there was a seat empty so that I didn't, like, hit the person next to me.
Wow.
I did have under the surface of the skin, but I couldn't get, you know, doctors to actually do that touching.
Mm-hmm.
Lumps of a cystic nature, kind of a cellulite. They diagnosed it as myofascial, chronic myofascial pain and buildup.
Wait a second. This is interesting. So you had little bumps on your skin. How big?
Not bumps on the skin.
Under the skin.
Large, kind of styrated clumping of the muscles.
Huh.
And they could be very easily felt, especially around the joints and the long bones.
So the muscles would actually knot up into little nodule kind of things?
Very large nodules, yes. It progressed to paresthesias in both legs and drop foot in both legs. And then eventually my entire right arm became paralyzed, completely paralyzed.
My God, this is suggestive of a massive invasion of your entire neurological system.
Yes. So the doctors were more focused on MS, ALS, that kind of thing.
Trying to basket it somehow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And they tried to basket me in fibromyalgia, and that was really easy to come back and say, no, wait a minute, you know, I didn't even have the pressure points and that kind of thing, and I refused to be put in a basket. I still kind of had that fighting will, even though it was locked inside me. I wouldn't allow them to just dismiss.
What about the emotional side of this whole thing, on relationships, on family, on coworkers? I don't know if you have any children and so forth, but...
Oh, it's been horrid. And not having the lesions at first and nothing really to show, of course, my family, especially my extended family, went first, you know, mother, brother, sister. They just thought, you know, she's lost it. She's just gone totally crazy.
They disconnected.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
My husband never said, I don't believe you. He said, I find this hard to believe as it became more and more bizarre. And... at one point, the most difficult was my adult children turned away, and we're very, very close. And there was about a six-month period where they refused to speak to me, and that was crushing. That was absolutely crushing.
When you spoke in those early years, and having been a public speaker... Did the words start to slow down and become, as you say, you were saying things you didn't know you were even saying, but would you get caught up on a word here and there? How did it manifest itself at first?
And you hear me still say, I'm not completely, I'm saying I'm well, or completely over that, and I can really relate to Jan about searching for words. I'm a person of words, so they used to come to me very easily. And no, I didn't notice it being gradual. For me, it came on like a bomb being dropped. I know exactly when it happened, and it all just seemed to happen at once, and it piled up and piled up. Symptom after symptom after symptom.
You knew something was seriously wrong.
I did.
But you didn't know what, and no one could tell you, and then the lesions appeared.
Yes.
Where did they start?
They started on my face, and as I said in my bio, there were times, the only place I've never had them is on my abdomen. And there were times that there was as much lesion as not. I looked like something from Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't need makeup for the Halloween party, you know. They weren't just, you know, the bites that I hear about or bumps.
Mm-hmm.
It was like just a complete loss of of skin, and they would, or they would come in like half dollar size and merge with the satellite lesions
mm-hmm.
into just larger and larger skin loss.
In your case, were you able to pull fibers out of these things, or the little fatty gristle masses?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, and I went through the phase of being obsessed with, you know, scoping them and looking at them, and until one day my eldest son is how it came back around. He said, "Mom, you know, we don't know what this is, and you could die of this tomorrow, or you could die when you're 90 in your wheelchair being hit by a truck, but you're not living your life." And he said, "You're living your life on the computer and scoping these things, and for God's sake, we can't even use a bowl because it might be a Petri dish." And so...
So you had a little scope, and you were picking at these things and looking at what you were getting...
Yes. And
this went on for a long time, it sounds like, months and months?
Probably a good year at least,
mm-hmm.
a year and a half. And also doing research at that time. And I've come to the point of belief now that that's better in the hands of people that are educated to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And for the health of the mind of us sufferers, I think my son was very wise, with his young voice in saying, "Live your life as fully as you possibly can. Do what you can for your health and learn what you can and listen. But you're not going to solve this."
Your family came back to you, most of it?
Yes, yes. Yes, they did.
Well,
but that was only after I was involved in quite a bit of media.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only through that reality.
If your family members were there, and I'm sure in the beginning they were very supportive, and did that matter to you? Did you get to the point where... it carried the day for you? Was it their support that did it? Did it get to the point where you couldn't actively and accurately and adequately respond to that kind of positive support?
At first, I could not.
You could not?
No. No, I was too detached.
And dealing mentally. And dealing with the scope and looking at these things and wondering what the hell is going on.
Right.
Okay, stand by if you would. We'll pause and come back. Another hour to go on our Morgellons special program, number 8. And welcome back. Hour number 2 of our 8th Morgellons special radio program tonight. Dealing with one of the saddest aspects of this wicked infestation, this stealth invasion of nanotechnology machines called Morgellons disease, that being the psychological, emotional, and relationship damages done to those infected. Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith are here. We're talking to Karen Marsh right now. I'm going to spend a few more minutes with Karen. In your short statement you gave to me via email earlier, you said something very profound. Two people living together 24/7 in the best of times is difficult. With Morgellons, it's nearly impossible. You've done patient support for 3 years, and you say half your time is spent dealing with emotional relationship and family issues.
At least, yes.
Why is it when people have this issue, and we don't know why, that's the wrong word, people who become infected don't understand the damage it does to their personalities, their feelings, their general reference to the world around them in some ways? And how do you reach across as a counselor to these people to try to tell them you've changed You're not the same, and you've got to grab that as a starting point. How do you do that?
Time and patience. It just takes a lot of time and patience. Some people catch on easier, quicker. You know, the light bulb comes on. Some people, you just have to be very persistent with. And I think Cliff had said the most difficult is when there is a spouse that does not believe, and not only does not believe, but is sabotaging every effort.
Well, you've dealt with that on a counseling basis, and I can't imagine anything more horrifying than that, that very scenario. The people who have this, who don't have a lot of lesions necessarily, like you in the beginning, still are dealing with issues. And we don't know where these things go. In your case, they went into your neurological system. They manifested with muscular and skeletal problems. Other people, it clearly goes into the brain. That affects the speech and the memory and all the rest of it. The brain fog, we call it.
Yes.
People in denial would be awfully difficult to reach as well. Well, I only have a few lesions. I only have a few fibers. You know, I have only had this for a month, and I'm fine. How do you reach across to them to tell them, no, you're not fine? You've got something to deal with here.
Well, so far I've been fairly successful, and I just keep at them with information, literature from the many good researchers that we have out there, my own history. There are also others helping. And we do, you know, three-way calling, tag teaming.
Mm-hmm.
And it just eventually we seem to be able to break through.
Well, you've contributed mightily to the lives of many who otherwise would languish, and maybe they wouldn't make it. You run across people who express to you feelings of suicide, of not wanting to go on, I imagine, too, commonly.
Constantly. Yeah, that would be probably second to the marital and spousal issues. But, you know, my own marriage has suffered due to this work that I do, and it's become my passion. And Cliff put that very well also about, how do you phrase it, about the spark.
Right.
And it isn't the spark so much between the people in a relationship. It's almost as if the spark of the personality of the person
diminishes.
Right. And in my own situation, I feel that's kind of where I'm at with my husband. And he has very minimal lesions. I dealt with that in my own relationship, and he was in denial for a while. But did come around very quickly and has been very supportive.
That's good. You have a great friend there, at least.
I do.
How has this ultimately affected your home, your business, your lifestyle, your security, everything you worked for?
It's gone. Every bit of it. Every bit of it. I walked away. My house ended up becoming molded, and that seems to be a commonality. Mold, water, bad water, rotting. And we walked away with nothing but the clothes on our back. Bought clean clothes and had already run through all of my savings, 401k,
mm-hmm.
equity, everything. And one thing that I've learned, not all of this has been bad, is that it's just stuff. And there's a bigger purpose.
People do get hung up on stuff.
They do. And that between couples, where one is a patient and one is not,
mm-hmm.
is an issue. You know, you're spending too much money on doctors, or you're spending too much money on, you know, naturopaths or this or that.
Right.
So it does become an issue. But we were changed from what I would call an upper class, very secure, we thought, lifestyle to eating out of food banks and the assistance of the good churches around here, and very humbling.
Well, my friend, you're doing angelic work for an awful lot of people. I've heard just incredible stories about your contribution, your heart, and your dedication to this, and I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, I want to thank you for sticking with us. It's meant a lot.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Cliff, you there?
Yes. Yes.
It's another incredible story. Go ahead, Cliff.
Karen has done a wonderful job, Jeff, and she's spot on the money when she says that it takes within a relationship, when you're dealing with a person in denial that may have this affliction, time and then more time, and then understanding mixed with more time.
Well, in her case, she said it started with her face, and she began plucking out those little fat gristle things with a few fibers, and then she got obsessed with the little scope, looking at that, and the world began to close in around her. And
yes, yes. And she dealt with another subject that's she's right on the money with, and you don't hear too many people mention it, but a lot of people, Jeff, are losing everything they own. And it takes a period of time, sometimes years, but almost inevitably, people tend to lose their assets, all the things they've worked for all their life. It just goes away. They lose interest in it, or they spend it trying to figure out what's wrong with them. Or in some cases, I have a friend who just walked away from a catalog of rentals that he owned and just gave it up. You
just
know?
Walked.
Just walked. You just can't get it together to deal with these kinds of issues. The day-to-day stuff just loses its significance, and you just fall into this black hole, if you will, of this disease. And but when Karen says that when you're dealing with a person in denial, that you need to just work with them and give them literature and mm-hmm. talk to them. And sooner or later, that, coupled with the fact that this disease is relentless and remorseless in its progress, will bring them around.
That's good to know. Okay, we have another special guest standing by. Can we speak to Jan now? Is she up? You there, Jan?
Hi,
you bring,
Jeff.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
Karen has just done some amazing things for a lot of people, and she's truly doing work that is almost superhuman, in my opinion, reaching out like she is.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had a phone conversation with her last week, and we had a nice talk, and she's been through many more things than she even alluded to you on the program, so I mean, I just can't even tell you how much respect I have for her, for all that she's gone through, and how many people she's reaching out to help.
Well, all right. Stand by. When we come back, we're going to say hello to Sunny, who will join us. Sunny's been a registered nurse for 30 years and worked for the public health department in Tennessee when she became infected in 2001. We'll hear her story, or part of it tonight, as we continue with our Morgellons special program number 8. As we continue with our Morgellons special number 8, a close-up look, a personal look at the psychological, emotional, and relationship issues that those afflicted, infected have to face. Cliff Mickelson is with us. Jan Smith is with us. I consider them dear friends now, even though we've never met personally. We've been together from the beginning on this. And The little part I'm able to bring to all of you is made possible by them and our other special guests tonight. And up next with us, joining us now, is Sunny. Sunny, hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, thanks very much for being here. Registered nurse for 30 years, worked with the public health department in Memphis, Tennessee. You became infected in 2001. Part of your job training was related to infectious diseases at the CDC in Dallas, and you were forced to retire in May of 2002 due to your dire health situation created by Morgellons. We're talking again tonight pretty much about the emotional issues, interpersonal issues, the issue that many have to face, and that's denial. It's not really bothering me. I only have a few of this or a few of that, or I don't have anything. I'm perfectly fine. And as a professional in the health field, and now I don't want to use the word victim, but let's use the word experiencer. How's that?
That sounds okay.
Okay. Talk to us about the psychological issues of this as you've experienced it, please.
Well, excuse me. It's an emotional thing, but also I sort of look like it when I'm on the fence. I can see both sides of it. I can see the patient's viewpoint, and I can see the medical side. My family looked at me like, you're a nurse. Why doesn't anybody know how to treat you? Why can't they help you decide what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm a nurse and I get that, how can the average person even hope to even come anywhere near that? Now, when are we going to start questioning some of the things that we get as diagnosis? When a patient goes to the doctor and they're told they have contact dermatitis or psoriasis or they're tired, they're fatigued, they're stressed, the average patient, they say,
I'm pulling these little fatty-like gristle things out of my skin. There are occasional fibers or a lot of fibers. It's not contact dermatitis, Doc. And the doc
most
says, well...
Will not,
yeah.
But most people won't question their doctor
in the beginning.
They're afraid to.
Yeah.
They accept it and go home. And they don't get any better. They get worse. And then they think, oh, it's something that I'm not doing. I'm not getting enough rest. I'm not eating the right diet. I'm not taking the right vitamins. You know, I'm not using the right soap. There's a lot of things that they experience that they can't even begin to understand why. And they're too scared to talk to their doctor or too intimidated to talk to their physician or their nurse practitioner or whoever they see.
Go ahead, please.
Well, a lot of people don't even have doctors. They don't have medical insurance. So they're using their neighborhood pharmacy. And they're just trying to pick things off the shelf that will help them.
Or read the internet and trying to come up with a home remedy, a home cure, that kind of thing. The issue of fatigue and a diminution of stamina, shall we say, and a feeling of needing to sleep more, not ever getting enough proper rest or rarely getting enough proper rest, seems to be a common thread. And then we also have the issue of musculoskeletal issues, of tightening of joints, tightening of hands. Some people talk about their ankles and their feet getting tighter. This, I guess, is something that's fairly common among Morgellons sufferers.
Yes, it is. I hear it every day in all the people that I talk with.
Really?
And I also feel it myself, very much so. They seem to... It's like I'm awake all the time, but when I do go to sleep, I'm down for days. I hear that every time I talk to somebody new. They cannot get enough rest. Even if they've slept for 10 hours, they still wake up tired.
Or proper rest.
That's
a quality rest.
Quality would be a much better term. They
quality
never
rest.
Seem to get enough. And then they're up for days, or they can't sleep. They lay down, and they're just there. It's like they're just, you know, a body in a bed for one of another scenario.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But they're not getting any rest. So then they're up, and they're obsessed with finding out the answers. They're going to clean, they're going to do exercises, or they're going to do this, and they can't. They just sort of sit there, and they might be able to put dishes in the dishwasher.
Some people want to try to, and I've read enough about this now, they want to try and force their way through it. They want to hit the gym, do the exercise, bicycle, run the extra miles, and they can't. And it's not that they might not even
be able to get to the car to do it.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of them just they write stories and they'll say, I just don't have it. I get tired. I walked around the block. I was gassed. Whatever, it just happens. And
if I can interject something on this issue. Hi, Sonny. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You really are hitting it right on the head there. And I just wanted to say real quickly that this disease or this affliction appears to be metabolically in sync with the body. In other words, the more activity you attempt to do, the more it kicks itself up. Yes, it does. You can take that one to the bank. It's tied to the metabolic rate.
So it's in the endocrine system.
Yes, and so if you go out with a shovel and start digging, it's gonna kick you in the tail.
Fascinating. Stand by. We have to do a little break here. We'll come right back. Morgellon Special Number 8. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along tonight. Please do remember that Rentz.com on the left-hand side of the homepage has four special categories of Morgellon's information for you. This is America's unknown epidemic. In fact, it is the world's unknown epidemic. We don't know how many people have it, but it's not a few. We shall continue. Hi, we're back, and Cliff and Jan are here talking with Sonny right now. Okay, Sonny, please continue with your story there. This thing is so creepy, the way it impacts people emotionally, because in the beginning they don't know it. And when you try to help them, I'm hearing over and over again that they don't want to hear it. Things don't come back as they should. It's a mess.
Yes, it is. I know initially most of them think they just have possibly a rash or an allergy to something, and the lesions develop. The fibers, they may or may not even pay any attention to. In the beginning, I really didn't even pick up on them. I just assumed, I have a pet, and I just assumed it was pet hair. And that's what everybody kept telling me. Oh, it's just pet hair. Don't worry about it.
Did you think some of the lesions on, did you have anything on your face?
I was very fortunate. I didn't.
Uh-huh.
I did have some very unusual things on my head.
Some people think that facial issues are acne, and they're not acne-like at all. It's a whole different thing, really.
I know, but a lot of people will keep saying, oh, it's just acne. It's just something I'm eating that's aggravating the acne. They haven't found the right medicine that's going to treat it. It keeps getting better, and then it comes right back. Or else they'll have a month maybe without anything. Then the unusual itchy feeling up and under the skin doesn't seem to fit into the acne category. But the ones that have the scalp, those are the ones that really have questions. When you feel things running a foot race in your head and your skin and you can't figure out what it is,
right.
That's pretty much how mine started. And being that I worked for the health department, they kept saying, oh, well, I just had a case of body lice or head lice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm public health, that was considered a job hazard.
Right.
And then when the red streaks started on my arms, that didn't set well with lice. Oh, well, it had to be scabies. And then they said, oh, it had to be Norwegian scabies, a special kind. There was always an answer, but never a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And when my scalp sloughed off in my hand when I was shampooing my hair, they didn't have an answer for that.
God, no.
I didn't either.
No.
I think that was when I knew that there was something really different about this particular infection, and it really didn't fit into any category that I could ever find.
Cliff and Jan, especially Cliff, I remember in our first and second specials, talked about the idea that these represent some kind of an intelligence, a hive, a collective consciousness, if it is consciousness, or a collective communicative ability within the body. Do you sense that as well?
I do believe that there's something that one area of the body that's infected will sort of compensate for another area of the body that's being treated, so to speak.
I see.
And it seems like if one gets well, the other will make sure that it gets sick again.
And if you drive them into the skin and they seem to go away, and I've heard this from several people, they don't really go away, do they, Cliff Mickelson? They just go in.
They just go in. They go semi-dormant, if you will, but they're there. You can sense them. It's a very odd thing to try and explain to most people who don't know what this is about, but you can actually sense them. There's an awareness.
That's the hardest part probably to explain to people. Someone will say, I know something's there, and they look at their skin. They don't see anything, and then if they feel with their finger, they'll feel a little tiny bump in the skin, and they say, I knew something was there. And then some people will go after it and dig it out, and they'll be one of those gristle-like things with or without fibers. They have a little black dot in them. We've seen the pictures on the site. But yes, absolutely. Tell us a little bit more about this awareness, the sense that you know something's in your skin.
Well, for one thing, you can go after these things and dig them out, but if you do, you're playing hob with the devil, because it's gonna strike back. That's one thing that's been consistent about this disease, is that it can become very aggressive, and it does not like to be messed with. If you leave it alone, it tends to progress at a slower rate. If you attack it, it will actually, for lack of a better way to put it, fight back by going into overdrive. There's an awareness about the affliction, even when your lesions have subsided. In particular, in my case, I have very few lesions right now. That doesn't mean that they're not there. I know that it's still in my body. I can feel it. I know there's areas that are going to be prone, and there will be lesions again in the future. It never leaves you, Jeff. It's always with you.
People need to think about this as a systemic problem. It's not a dermal problem. It's not something that's on your skin. That's just one stage of it. And Sonny, do you have any ideas about, are there any hard and fast general rules or parameters as to when it appears on the skin? Does it appear on the skin later or earlier in the affliction stage, or can it happen at any time?
Well, I changed my mind about it. In the beginning, I felt that if the lesions appeared, that you had probably had it for less than 6 months. And the more aggressive you could be with treating it, the more chance that you had that you would get rid of it or get cured. Now I'm beginning to believe that the lesions seem to be more of like mass, like what do they call it, critical mass.
Oh, yes.
You've actually had...
Like shedding viruses, so they build up to the extent that they're just coming out all over the place.
That's right. I believe that you've had the disease for quite a while, and that the lesions are just something the body can't deal with anymore, and therefore the lesions are starting to show up. So people that have had the lesions, they're not early on anymore. I don't believe that. I believe that they've had it for probably a couple of years at least. I hope that's proven to be wrong, but I don't think so. I think that's like a sponge. You can only hold so much in that sponge, and then it overflows.
Are you married, Sonny?
Technically, yes. My husband left me when I got sick, or right before we knew what it was, and he just didn't know it, and he thought, I had lost my mind, basically, and, like I said, you're a nurse, you should know. Nobody can find out what's wrong with you, right? I don't believe it. He left, so that was it, but technically we're still married.
I'm sorry to hear that. I suspect, clinically speaking, you may be better off without someone like that, unless that person were to come around at one point, but I'm sorry.
So. I think I'm much better off.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll bless that. We'll pause and come right back. A couple more minutes with Sonny, then we'll finish with Jan and Cliff, our special number 8. Okay, and we're back. Okay, Sonny, what would you like to leave us with? We just have a couple more minutes for you tonight, and I really am grateful for your presence here. Thank you.
Well, I think we just need to have faith that we're going to get the answers to this and that it's not going to be long coming, and just keep doing what we're doing.
Do you know how you became infected, by the way?
I have no idea. I wished I did. I just wish that there were more answers, but every time we come up with answers, it seems like instead
of... More questions.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
We have more questions than we have a solution.
Did you have the same problem that most everyone else had with trying to speak and a word would just not be there for you?
Yes.
Or the wrong word would be inserted in the sentence, which had no bearing or very little bearing to what you were trying to say? It's almost like spoken dyslexia.
That's exactly the way I described it. And I also, and I've noticed that the higher cognitive levels that we possess are impaired quite a bit. And I have trouble, as you can tell, I'm stumbling again. But we're higher. The higher cognitive levels seem to be the ones that they hit first.
They and hit.
That's right. And I do know that one of the doctors that did come to try and help me, he was a psychiatrist too, by the way, but he was also a friend. He ordered some tests on me, preliminary, and he ordered an MRI, which showed lesions in the white matter of the brain.
Which area?
No, white matter of the brain,
okay.
And nobody can tell me what they are and why they're there.
Have any other Cliff, have any other Morgellons patients had MRIs, brain scans?
Not to my knowledge, but that's really, really interesting information, Sonny.
There are several.
We need to check this out further.
Sonny just said she's got word that several others have, and these are Morgies, and they've had the same kind of results?
That's right. The ones that have managed to get the test. It's very significant, and I keep trying to recommend if you can get one done, it must be done with and without contrast.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you... I have a favor to ask on behalf of everyone.
Sure.
Can you get images of those scans or your scan and make them available to me so I can post them on the website? This is a very important thing.
I'll do my very... I've got the scans.
All right. Well,
I've got them. They're in my hands right this minute.
If you can turn them into JPEGs, let me know. Send them my webmaster. We'll put them up and... this is very important. Thank you for that. It just occurred to me to ask. I don't know why, but that's just the way it works. And we've got some evidence there of something going on. Wow.
Yes, Jeff, and if I could just ask Sonny real quick, later on I would like to discuss that with you a little bit in detail, if we could, perhaps over the email or something.
Sure.
Because this is something we need to explore further.
Very good.
Call me. Email me, whatever you want to do. I'm available.
Absolutely.
Sonny, thank you.
I've devoted my life to this, believe me.
Yeah. Thank you on behalf of a lot of people out there who don't even know they have this yet. and God bless you for all the good things you've done. And we're here for you.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been my pleasure. I'm honored. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's bring Jan and both Cliff back up here in our final segment here. We've learned a lot tonight, Jan Smith. We always seem to, at least I have, just asking questions and hearing you folks who've had it between you and Cliff 18 years now, and this issue continues to generate more questions than answers. But I think we just stumbled on something there that is clearly a lead that we need to follow.
Oh, definitely.
Anything you want to add, Jan, that we haven't covered or touched on? I think we've tried to do this. To me, the physical suffering is horrible. This often presents itself in the face. It's the same old thing. The person becomes aware of something in their face. They'll often pick at a lesion, they'll pull these things out. We've got pictures of them. They're the little fatty-looking things with
right.
little black dots in them. There'll be some fibers occasionally. But again, and Sonny said this, in her opinion, is a manifestation of a full-blown infestation, and they're just kind of creeping out to the surface in some areas and pushing their way out. Is that logical to you?
Yeah, I agree. When I first had this disease, I was hoping it was was just a cutaneous kind of a thing, but now I know it isn't. And I only have two lesions at this point, and I have more fibers coming out of my pores than ever. And those come out pretty much painlessly, so that someone may have this disease and may have tons of fibers coming out of it, and they wouldn't even be aware of that unless they actually did some of the checking, like under the nails, and did have a magnification piece of equipment to see mm-hmm. these, and then they'd realize they have it.
And then we heard Karen say, when this happens, the person spends God only knows how many hours and months and maybe years looking at these things under magnification with a little handheld magnifying glass.
When I first started with this disease, I thought I was the Lone Ranger, because 10 years ago, there wasn't any Morgellons organizations at all, and I was just an angry person that just said, gee, I used to have a job and a place in this community, and now I'm relegated to being a crazy person, and I'm going to go home and prove that I'm not. So I did a lot of research, and at the time I felt like, at least I felt justified, because I did come across some finds in some of my little experiments with burning and whatnot that just made me feel like at least I had proved that I had something, and that it was unusual, and I had just only prayed that researchers, you know, could see a program like yours with the things that Cliff and I had done earlier with our experimentation and jump on that and just say, gee, these people found something strange, and they don't know what it is, but maybe we can find out.
Well,
and fortunately for us, that's come to pass.
The FDA is sitting on its butt doing nothing.
Yeah.
Not a big surprise. I'll suggest that at the top levels, they know exactly what this is. Somebody does somewhere. Or they'd be at least evidencing a normal curiosity, which they are hesitant to do. And I want to thank you. We have just 3 minutes left for the achievements that you have made by yourself, Jan. Literally working alone, documenting this. Many of the pictures at Rents.com and elsewhere are yours. You've shared so much of your life. And you're one of my heroes. In fact, Karen and Sonny work 24/7 helping people. These are great human beings. All of you are. And this has been a very difficult program for me to do. It touches me. And I hope you out there listening are paying very close attention to what these people have done and their sacrifices and their victories. We haven't wiped this out, but we're sure taking it on with some incredibly heroic people. So, Jan, I thank you.
Well, Jeff, I thank you, because if people like you weren't taking this on, we would be lost, because As you and I both know, our government is not interested in this. And as you say, I believe that they really do know what's going on, and this comes under another one of those files where they're protecting something. And that's a tough nut to swallow when you're sick, but that's the place I've had to come to.
Okay, and Cliff, we got 2 minutes left. What would you like to say that maybe will amplify? Anything you want to add to this tonight?
Well, just what Jan said is true. I believe, as she does, that there is an answer to this disease. We will find this affliction. We will find it. We will find it with or without the help of the powers that be. In fact, probably in spite of the powers that be.
There you go. Yeah.
We're fighting an uphill battle, and they are on the uphill side, making it as difficult as they can. I have very little use for the people that are supposed to be in charge of the public welfare in the health fields.
They're in charge of the corporate welfare, for Christ's sake.
I'm being polite,
man.
Jeff. I'm being polite here. I'm not saying what I really think.
I know you're not.
But, and you know, Jan, I just thank God that I've had the opportunity to get to know Jan, to work with Jan, because she has been a spark plug for me, and we've kind of helped each other get through some pretty tough times with this affliction, and we're proof that you can do it, and, you know, you don't have to let it totally... It'll change your life. There's no way around that. But you don't have to let it ruin your life.
And again, counsel for married couples, people in relationship where one has it and the other doesn't. We can only hope that the non-afflicted party in the relationship will at least open his or her mind and do the research to try to help. And I guess, Cliff, just unsupportive, unqualified. I should make it clear, unqualified love matters. When you're unsupportive, it can destroy things. But if you give unqualified love and support and try not to expect more than the person is able to give, things can work.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we will do another program. This one has not been easy. I think we brought a lot of very crucial information forward tonight in an area of a, I don't want to call it a disease. I want to call it a syndrome and an infestation that has never been touched upon in this medium. I'm going to put it up on the website, like the other seven programs, free of charge for everyone to listen to. And I hope that the medical community out there pays very close attention to the psychological aspect of this, the emotional damage, the pain, because it is unmeasurable. It is. So again, Jan, thank you very much for being
here,
dear.
You're welcome, Jeff. Anytime.
Okay. And Cliff, my friend, I salute you for your wisdom and your always brilliant counsel.
Thank you, Jeff, and it's been a pleasure.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's our program, and again, I will get it ready, and we'll put it up at rents.com as soon as we can, so please share it. If your doctor is at least partially open-minded, get your doctor to listen to any or all of the 8 special programs we've done, and we couldn't have done them here without people like Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith and our other special guests and friends and the heroic doctors who are working on this. And we don't want to forget, of course, Shoshana Allison and Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, who are two of the giants leading the charge. We're going to pause, and we'll be back.